Hey everybody, welcome to The Main Scoop. I'm Daniel Newman, one of your hosts here, Principal Analyst at Futurum Research, joined by...
I'm Greg Lotko, SVP and General Manager of the Mainframe Software Division at Broadcom.
Well, here we are at The Main Scoop. We've been talking about this for a while, and we came together to basically bring all of the important topics in technology, some of the biggest thinkers, some of the greatest minds, here to join us on the show for... perpetuity until we don't do the show anymore, and hopefully that'll be never, because we think there's a whole lot to talk about, Greg.
Agreed. It's all about the ecosystem, thinking about how customers view their overall IT environment. They interact with a bunch of different platforms and technologies, vendors and partners in the ecosystem, and this is an opportunity to have that holistic view and the conversation with the audience. So it's not going to just be you and me the whole time.
No, and thank goodness, right, for everybody out there. But I think we'll have a little bit of fun. I mean, here is the scoop.
I plan on having fun. I'm not just thinking about it.
We're going to have fun. We're going to have some fun. The scoop here is that there are so many complexities in this IT space right now. We are talking about all the companies, you know, evolutions and expansions and modernization efforts. And, you know, there's so much ecosystem and partnership. And so often, Greg, you know, people are thinking very competitively. They're thinking, oh, it's this or that. But you go into most companies, you know, IT, into their organization, and there are many vendors, many partners, and many experts that come together to really make the enterprise run. And I think that is the opportunity here to bring that all together and put that out there for our audience to learn.
For sure. There's many different platforms. There's many different capabilities and technologies. And what we started with is not the be-all, end-all. We make investments, we provide capabilities, we provide functionality, and then something new or different or additive comes along. We don't throw out the other stuff, we build upon it. And that's what really makes it so that you have to interconnect these things. You have to time together, leverage the investments you've already made, and time into the new to drive greater value.
And I think that's gonna be exactly what we're gonna unpack here. You know, when you first came to me and said, hey, let's do a show, you know, part of me says, well, it's always hard with one vendor to kind of do a show for a long time, because as an analyst, I'm trying to kind of really stay objective. But when you said to me, you know what, we'll bring on our partners, we'll bring on companies that are seen as our competitors.
Absolutely.
We're going to talk to them all, and we're going to really help inform the market. We're going to tell them what's going on. We're going to talk about how things are evolving, how they're changing. And of course, you'll bring your view from the inside at Broadcom, and I'll bring mine from the outside as an analyst at Futurum Research. And heck, we can start that right now, because today we have IBM fellow Christian Jacoby here to join us. So why don't we bring on our first guest?
Let's do it.
Well, Greg, we're back. We've got our first guest here, Christian Jacoby, fellow at IBM. Christian, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You know, I got to say, being first is, well, I mean, you and I are like, we're car guys, you know, so we like going fast. I feel like there's a Ricky Bobby reference in that, but in all seriousness, being first is good, and it also puts a little bit of pressure on you. So you ready to be here on the Main Scoop with us?
All good for me.
Just be yourself. It's fine.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, keep it natural, but be perfect.
Uh-huh.
All right, you ready for that? So, well, let's start off talking about, you know, you were instrumental in the development of the Telum processor, and that's your baby, and you're spending a lot of time over there. You know, I want to talk a little bit. I'm thinking we can talk some AI, we can talk some cybersecurity, we can talk some hybrid cloud. Let's start with AI, because that was a big enhancement in this newest generation ZBox for IBM. Talk a little bit about what's the story behind the AI and its part in the new Telum processor.
It's a really interesting story, because it really goes into how we decide what we put into every generation. We've worked very closely with a number of our clients, like understood what their businesses need in terms of the new capabilities of the next generation. And we did learn about AI being a really growing and important part of the IT landscape. And we were wondering, how does IBM Z systems play in that? And what we learned through all these client interactions is, where we make a difference is in low latency, real-time inferencing, not just training or generic inferencing, but focus specifically on the low latency so that clients can embed AI capabilities directly into their transaction workloads, which typically have like very low latency service level agreements and things like that.
And so the really, I think, cool thing about that is you took what has been a hallmark of this platform and the technology, and you combined it to address a challenge, right? So low latency, high throughput, high transaction speeds has always been the strong point of the mainframe. But as we looked at modern workloads and artificial intelligence and inferencing, there were people that were doing warehousing or marts off platform, that were doing calls off to do fraud detection. And combining the best of both worlds was to say, hey, let's make it so that you don't have to call out, so that you don't have to move out, but you can do it on the platform while preserving that speed,
that's,
right?
That's exactly it. We knew from those client conversations, some clients are doing fraud detection on a different platform, wasting critical latency on network hops and scheduling decisions, et cetera. Now they can integrate it directly into their mainframe workload, running it directly on the processor, super tightly connected into the cache hierarchy. And so that's what gives that low latency and the real-time capabilities.
And do we think this is going to drive different patterns, right? Because it wasn't just about the speed, it was data moving off the platform, a proliferation of copies of data. Do you believe this is going to drive more of the data centricity of keeping it on the platform? Or is it also, are you doing things to speed up the connectivity for those pieces of information that you got to bring that may not be resident on the mainframe?
I think it's a little bit of both. The whole concept is that clients can train their models anywhere. Many clients have invested in data lake strategies or train on GPU clusters in the cloud. So they are already comfortable with moving the data for the purpose of training. Mm-hmm. And then doing the inference with the low latency real-time capabilities on the processor brings that work to the mainframe, keeps it on the mainframe. But sometimes also additional data is necessary in the inferencing. So there's some gravity that we're also creating for new types of data coming into, you know, whatever, a MongoDB or something like that, that can support the inference work as part of the transaction.
One could listen to that and think that the motion was about keeping data on the platform, but that really wasn't the driver, the design point. It was about the speed of operation, the speed of inferencing, the speed of fraud detection. And the result is to do it on platform, even if you're drawing from data that's off platform with the model, as you say, but then embedding it in the transaction.
Absolutely, yes.
Very cool, very cool.
Yeah, it's super interesting to me, but one of the things IBM's been pretty outspoken about is this whole concept of kind of co-creation. Mm-hmm. So when you guys go generation to generation, one of the things I also kind of thought about is this was a fairly big difference. And again, there's always differences from generation 14 to 15, but this investment in AI, how much of this was driven by sort of the demand coming in and you guys taking it and listening versus you guys knowing the importance of sort of innovating, meeting the customer where they are?
We had a feeling that AI would be important for this generation, but we didn't have it right. We went to clients and talked about training and talked about, you know, generic inferencing. And through those conversations, we learned, no, we really got to be laser focused on low latency, real-time inferencing. So the client conversations definitely helped us shape exactly what we need to build. And then based on that, of course, like it's all the hardware design and all the enablement through the software stack that came from that.
And I don't actually think that was what was so unique about the 14. The 16. I'm backing up. You started with the 14. The reality is in every generation, IBM has involved customers in the development of what they're doing with the platform. But again, thinking about the ecosystem, it expands beyond that. One of the reasons I've really valued my interactions in the mainframe space is if you look at the technologists across the variety of vendors that are working around this technology and on this technology, but not only them, the customers, the technologists that are using the capabilities, they're invested. They care about what's going on in their environment. They care about the capabilities that they're delivering to their end customers. So you see folks wanting to get together, wanting to collaborate, and figuring out how, across all the capabilities being provided, how they can drive that greater value.
Well, I think we largely agree in principle. I mean, I think some of the bigger leaps from generation to generation are met by secular trends and demand. I think identifying your niche is super important, and I think you've made that clear. Another thing that came out very clear in your recent announcements were some of the focuses and enhancements in cybersecurity.
Yeah.
The pandemic drew a ton of attention to the amount of threats. Mainframe has always been known for incredible security capabilities. I think that has no chance of changing anytime soon. But talk a little bit about some of those enhancements and really what drove them in your, you know, Z16.
I mean, like you say, mainframe computers and the whole stack running on them and the applications have that history of being the data vault for many of those large enterprises. And we take that serious, and we can't rest on our laurels here. We always have to innovate and do the next you know, next step forward. And so one thing that we've looked at is what are future risks? And one of the risks that's out there are quantum computers. Now, quantum computers will be incredibly capable machines. They will be, you know, helpful in many complex problems that can't be solved today. And so there's huge upside with quantum computing, but there's also downsides. Quantum computers will eventually be able to crack today's cryptographic codes. And so that's, of course, a huge concern because, you know, nation state actors, for example, can already, you know, steal and store data waiting for quantum computers to be available and crack that data.
Yeah, you think about that. You don't have to be technologically savvy or smart about going to how you go to try to crack something if you have the horsepower and the brute force to do it. And quantum computing is going to bring that.
And whether
if you think about it in the old ways, it'll just be crushed.
Exactly. And whether that happens in 5, 10, or 15 years, there's a lot of uncertainty. But there's data being generated and stored today that we don't want to be out in the open 15 years from now, right? So that's where we started saying, okay, we got to start thinking about a roadmap to ensure that this data that runs on the mainframes is secured against those kinds of risk vectors. And so we started out with a quantum safe self-boot engine, sort of as the root of trust in the system, creating the first quantum safe server. And we have quantum safe algorithms in our crypto accelerator so that you know, clients can start using these advanced algorithms that are immune against the attacks from quantum computers. And then I will say one of the coolest things is also we have a sort of a dashboard that can create a report on which crypto algorithms are used where in the application stacks so that clients, I mean, obviously these application landscapes are very complicated, so that clients get a sense for which algorithms are used where are my most sensitive data and where do they need to do their investments first to get ready for a post-quantum world.
But let's make another point to our audience here. I mean, you said it yourself about how secure the mainframe platform is, and it can be easy for, you know, the customers out there, the people using the devices, the hardware, the mainframe, the software, and say, oh, most secure platform on the planet. You actually have to implement the capabilities. So, I mean, we're car guys, right? You can have the highest horsepower car, but if you don't ever press that accelerator down, you don't get the advantage of it, right? So if you have locks on your house, but you never actually lock them, but you carry the key around, it doesn't provide that capability. So there's encryption everywhere. There's ways to protect IDs. There's, you know, the security and being quantum safe. You want to enable those things and apply the latest capabilities, the features and functions, and implement them in your environment. And doing that is what makes it so secure.
Absolutely.
Just having it, but not using it, does nothing.
No, I think that's a great point. And by the way, I think most of the research that security, you know, analysts do actually identifies that we create a lot of our own vulnerabilities through, you know, it's
things that could have been avoided.
You know, I had a sticker, you know, I think they did, you know, some DOD study ones, and it was like stickers left on
laptops.
With
the ID and the password.
With the ID and the password, you know. So yes, there are those, you know, those Raspberry Pis being installed in, you know, tier, the most secure data centers in the world. But those are real, those are TV stories. The real stories are a lot of times we create our own vulnerabilities. And to your point, you got to put your foot on that accelerator. And that's, by the way, something companies have to be thinking about all the time. You're always on defense nowadays in cybersecurity. I did want to ask one quick question because I know I want to get to hybrid cloud. I know we want to talk about that. But with quantum, how much does IBM and your quantum business and your mainframe business, like, did you collaborate on that? Was that a collaboration?
Yeah, there's good collaboration going on. There's collaboration in both the crypto algorithms that are actually immune to quantum computers. The IBM research group is very active in that regard, and we implemented some of those algorithms in z16. We're also looking into how in the future will we be able to combine quantum computers and mainframes and sort of use the quantum computer as an accelerator to solve interesting business problems. Now that's a little down the road.
There was a zip and a zap. Is there going to be a quap?
We'll find the right name for it.
All right.
And I mean, quantum computers are a few years down the road, but yeah, we're talking about things like that.
Well, we all know there's a symbiotic relationship between classical and quantum computing, and those two things are going to work together. You know, both do certain things very well, and
as there actually has been with every technology, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you had mainframes, you had desktops, right? You had distributed servers, we have cloud, it's not each of them in isolation. It's them together.
Well, let's segue. That's a great segue. I did that on accident, but I think you did that on purpose. So
every once in a while.
Okay, you got one. Greg won, Dan zero. This could be a scorekeeping thing. You know what I'm saying?
Don't play a drinking game at home. Yeah.
We'll be more fun. Hybrid. So that's kind of like on the tip of everyone's tongue right now. Hybrid architectures, hybrid cloud, hybrid IA, and AI. But you know, I think it's something your CEO is certainly talking a lot about right now.
Yep.
It's common knowledge. But you know, in the mainframe world, sometimes the idea of connecting to the cloud was sort of poo-pooed and no-note, but that's changing.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about how... Yeah, absolutely. I'm setting them up. Hold on, let me do my job. Talk a little bit about how in the next generation, with z16 and beyond, how you guys are thinking about hybrid, as we know that's what's on every enterprise's mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that a lot of enterprises are running their key mission-critical data and their transactions on IBM Z systems. And this data and these transactions need to connect into applications that are running in a hybrid world. And that could be on-prem hybrid, it could be multi-cloud hybrid, be that AWS or IBM Cloud or Google, whatever it is, the mainframe needs to play with that and connect with that, right? And so that's why we invest in things like OpenShift technology to be available natively on the mainframe. That's why even at the hardware level, we're doing investments to be efficient at running containerized workloads, where we have capabilities like secure execution and confidential computing to run containerized workloads in a secure way that no other system can run. So it's both capabilities on the mainframe itself, and then capabilities to connect the data and the transactions to other applications outside.
Well, and the reality is, it's a hybrid world. No workload runs in isolation. It's why you see, you know, all the focus on open. It's not about necessarily just open source technologies. It's about connectivity. It's opening up APIs. So across different platforms, different vendors, different technologies, you can tie these things together, use the best of all worlds, tying them together for greater value.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, it's the way to the future, Greg, and it's really the only way that we're going to get there. I mean, I really can tell you from being out there talking to hundreds of vendors, customers in front of many audiences, and investors, that everyone sort of shares the idea that hybrid is the future. Now, multi-cloud versus hybrid cloud to one. I mean, there's
but
still
I don't
a lot
think
of debate.
It's just the future, it's the reality today.
It is.
No workload runs in isolation. It's the idea that the rhetoric and the discussion has changed from, oh, here's the next great technology that's going to take over everything, to looking back at the past and realizing, come on, that hasn't happened in the last 40 or 50 years. There have been some capabilities or technologies that went away, but it's those things that are great and have added value that get added to the mix, that get connected, and that's a hybrid reality today. The hybrid reality of tomorrow will include connecting all the best capabilities from everything that we know of today, but all the things that have yet to be invented.
The new thing is the attempt to create a orchestration layer that straddles that variety of platforms and tries to really bring together a management scheme to keep those things holding together. And I think there's some great progress in that sense.
And let me win this argument, because I feel like he's pushing back on me, and you know we don't like that here on the Main Scoop. I'm the one that's right, and you're the other person on the show. No. Kidding. That was actually you made a great point.
You've got two scoops. and the guest people that'll come in.
The banana split.
It's always going to be more than us.
Two scoops. No, but what I was really trying to point to is people have made this sort of assertion that we are already there as it comes to cloud. And the data's pretty evident. We are actually very early innings. You're at 25 to about 33% of workloads have been deployed to any public cloud.
And that's all workloads. If you narrow that down to enterprise workloads, it gets,
And so my point is, when I use the word future, and I just feel like, you know, in the first episode, I can't get shut down that hard.
Well, but you didn't call your company Pastum.
Pastum Research.
Futurum.
When I use the word future, though, it is an evolutionary state. What I mean is, I think we're in the point right now where we, as sort of thought leaders, pundits, industry players, developers, engineers, we are really cognizant of what the future looks like. But when you're an enterprise and you're out there and you're listening here, you're going, well, we still have most of our, you know, most of our workloads, most of our data is still on-prem, or we're just starting to look at multiple clouds. So I think there is kind of, you know, we can sort of, I think we agree principle on most things, but I think there is an evolution of what's actually happening. And then there is the, of course, agreed upon state that we, as people that are analyzing the industry, are saying because we understand it. And so it's
and the evolution is going to be continual.
It's a lot of fun.
Because we don't know what's next.
But what we do know is that Christian here made a really, really great guest here on our first
episode. Absolutely. Thank you.
Pleasure having you.
Thank you.
Yes. Christian, thank you so much. Love to have you back for episode 50 or something like that.
We'll do a retrospective.
Yeah, we'll do that.
When Z18, 19, or 20 comes out.
We'll see. I'm working on it.
Sounds good.
Thanks for joining us. Thank you. So that was a lot of fun having, you know, Christian join us, first guest.
Absolutely.
No pressure on him.
Yeah, really.
You know, like, hey, you're going to be our first guest. Come
it's
here.
It's like stepping in the lines.
Be the expert. Right? So now everyone, we're going to do like a points thing, you know, one plus, one minus versus the last guest, not just him.
Yeah, so we'll let the audience do that.
Let them do that.
All right.
All right. Put that in the comments, everybody. We would love to hear from you. We actually would love to hear from you. So as you're watching the show, if you're seeing this on one of the platforms on YouTube, hit us up on there, hit us up on Twitter, hit us up across social, because we do like to get your feedback. That might also shape some of the stuff we'll talk about in the future.
We want to go where you want us to go.
Absolutely. So what'd you think about you know, the comments from Christian? In line
really cool. So I always think it's interesting how with technology you have to be forward looking, right? You have to be thinking about what's next, because the time it takes to develop these things, there's a long lead cycle. So you have to be anticipating. You did hear when we talked about him coming back what he said, right? When I talked about the generations? I said, so you'll come back with Z18 or 19 or 20. And he said, they're already working on it. So, I mean, with 2.5-3 years in between generations, we're, you know, the next decade or more is already being worked on.
I'll have my 6G phone by then. Maybe 7G.
Maybe 10.
10G. That's what our next, you know, we'll get in our next political debates.
When do we go to H?
I don't know. What do I use that Googler for?
I don't know.
That's what happens when they go to Washington with technology. I don't know how I ended up there.
I think
there
we're
in
a
Washington,
little off tangent.
But, yeah, okay.
But it is a hybrid world, so absolutely. We can go anywhere with technology.
No, absolutely. I was just thinking about some of the old, you know, comments and debates and like, you know, about 6G. It's like, when's 6G coming? It's like, well, 5G is like just here right now. So, but I think for people out there that kind of don't understand the R&D cycles is that companies that really invest in R&D are usually working on technologies far into the future.
2, 3, 4 generations ahead. Absolutely.
Which is really cool because, you know, we had someone here that, you know, maybe knows a little bit, can't tell us, but
he's doing that from a hardware capability, and it's actually the ecosystem around it. I mean, that hardware needs middleware and software and applications to run on it to drive value to not only the people that are using the technology but their customers.
You know, tell you what I really liked. I liked the tie together of, you know, bringing this whole secular trend of AI, the secular trend of cybersecurity, and of course, this big enterprise tech trend of AI, of hybrid cloud, and really making them apply to every enterprise, every CIO out there that's looking at their architecture right now. They're looking at the hardware that, you know, they've been dependent upon for many, many years, and then they're thinking about how do they move those workloads, or do they need to move those workloads. I mean, look, this is really where we're at, is there's going to become an interdependency between the traditional and the legacy technologies and the public cloud. There's going to be an important connection that we need to keep this data safe. We need to keep it, you know, we need to keep it very scalable. We need to keep it, you know, we need to make sure companies can operate as efficiently as possible, but there can be no sacrifice.
Yeah.
And so that was really what I took from it.
And I agree with all that. The only word I didn't like in there was the legacy word, because when people hear that word, they think static, they think not changing, right? So we could have Christian on talking about the mainframe if people think about, oh, that's that technology from years ago, but it's an ongoing investment. It's an ongoing enhancement, not only in the hardware, but in the software, in the entire ecosystem. So the legacy, if you will be what people have done with the different platforms and technologies that they have, that they've already implemented in their application space, in their operation space, in the overall IT environment. All of that is legacy. It's the reality of what they already have. I'd rather say
use
it that
way.
Use the
word proven. How about
proven.
That?
I agree. It's the proven capabilities that are already delivered. Now you want to deliver a new capability. Do you want to do that by replatforming some stuff, or do you want to just be additive? And when you're additive, which is going to drive you to greater value other than reinventing the wheel, you have to then connect it, which gets you into hybrid and open which is what the whole IT environment is about.
By the way, legacy can also be a really great thing. You know, the legacy of Ferrari versus the legacy of the Pinto. You know what I mean? Like, so there are certain legacies that are actually really wonderful things. And what I mean is, you know, when I say proven, I say legacy, I really do mean that enterprises have found technologies that they trust, technologies that they can depend upon, technologies that keep their customers' data safe, they keep their operations running. And the opportunities that might come with migration to new platforms, new capabilities, and new technologies are enticing. Mm-hmm. But that gradual shift has to be done in such a way where there can be no sacrifice, there can be no risk. And especially in many of the industries that use mainframe technologies, you know, you got high security risks, you got financial industries, you got healthcare, you got government. Risk is not okay in these transformations. So if we hit it right, call it the legacy of the Ferrari, and we bring it forward, I think we can all agree that we're going to somewhere good.
And I think we always learn along the way and apply those learnings to the broader environment so that we're not repeating the mistakes, we're adding enhancements, we're adding additive value, and we're connecting it all together.
Well, this is a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. Been an absolute pleasure. Look forward to the next one, and we'll see you folks next time.
Thanks for tuning in to The Main Scoop.